You're listening to the Hello World podcast, number 82. My name is Sean Wildermuth, and I am your host. The Hello World podcast is where you can hear from some of your favorite developers, authors, and speakers about how they got started in this business and the decisions they made along the way. We go way back to their first computer, their first code experience, and their first job. With this episode, it only leaves 18 episodes left. Yes, we're ending the podcast after 100 episodes. The last episode will be Richard Campbell interviewing me about how I got started. Can't wait for you to hear it. We've decided not to have a sponsor for the podcast, but if you want to support the podcast and the kinds of things that I do, feel free to visit my Pluralsight courses at seanw.me/psauthor, including my newest course on implementing and securing an API with ASP.NET Core. On today's show is John Galloway. John works at Microsoft as a technical evangelist focused on ASP.NET and Windows Azure. He's the co-author of Rock's professional ASP.NET MVC, writes samples and tutorials like the MVC Music Store, and is a frequent speaker at conferences and international webcam events. John's been doing professional web development for 17 years, including high-scale applications in financial, entertainment, and healthcare analytics. He's been part of the Hurting Code podcast, Twitters as @JohnGalloway, and blogs at weblog.asp.net/JohnGalloway. He likes to travel, but spends most of his time in San Diego with his amazingly patient wife, Rachel, three wonderful daughters, a dozen avocado trees, and the occasional rattlesnake. John and I could have reminisced for years back. I don't know how many years it's been now that I've known John, but he's always been doing the conference circuit, and I think I first met him before he joined Microsoft. He's always got a giant smile and a head full of ideas when I meet him, and it's always fun to catch up. His story starts being the Apple and Mac nerd in high school. I think you'll like his story. Let's take a listen. I'm excited to have on my show today, John Galloway. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing great. I'm super, very much excited to be here.
Oh, awesome. So. Yeah, as we head towards the end, you've been doing a podcast for years and years now. I think I took the smarter route and said, I'm going to finish the podcast after 100.
Yeah. It's, as you know, it's a good amount of work. It's a ton of fun, and I always get more out of it than any guest or anything. You know, I just feel like I learn a lot and it gets me more excited about the work I'm doing day to day and everything.
That's awesome. So when you were growing up, did you have a computer at the house? Did you have that, you know, canonical first computer?
You know, that wasn't my first. My first experience was we had Apple II in the classroom. We had, I think, an Apple IIe and then a IIc in class. And I rode my bike to school so that I could, you know, stay late, and I would, like, you know, write computer programs on the Apple IIs, and there was one for a while, and then there were two. So, but there weren't many other people that cared about them. So as long as I rode my bike and, you know, stayed after that, I could get as much programming time as I wanted there.
And was that like Apple Basic, or what were you using?
Yeah, it was. It was Apple Basic, and, you know, I wrote some simple games, and I would get magazines, and then you'd type the code from the magazine in, and, you know, hope you didn't get a typo. And, you know, I had some time on it, but I was going through stuff lately, and I found stacks of graph paper where I would write stuff down, you know, one character, all uppercase per square, you know, I would write it out on graph paper. So, and the funniest thing I was thinking about recently was I read this article about how to lock down your, cause it was all just basic. You could look at the code, you know, it was the whole view source thing way back then. And so this thing was like, well, how to lock down your code, and using call -151 to drop people into the machine code monitor, and how to lock keystrokes and all that.
Wow.
So one day I was trying that. I made this big game, and I also included all these different things I'd read about, like how to secure your code. And then I ran it, and I realized there was no way to interrupt the program. because of all this stuff I'd put in, like I'd written a program that was smarter than I was at this point. And so I just had to turn off the computer and lose all my work. So it was a good kind of introduction to programming.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And did that passion drive through high school, or did you get distracted with girls and sports and cars and
gosh, you know, honestly, I mean, I had fun with computers all through. So we did get a K Pro 10, which ran CPM. We got that my eighth grade year, and that had M Basic, which was Microsoft Basic, and then it had C Basic, which you could like build simple compiled Basic programs, and then S Basic, which was like structured Basic, which had a weird kind of like Pascal kind of, I don't even know. But yeah, so I mean, I did that, and then also on that, it had some simple, you know, text-based games. There was one called Ladder, which was basically Donkey Kong. And we had a family friend that showed me that you could hex edit these things. And so I go in and hex edit the levels and start creating my own levels or making them easier or stuff. And then at our high school, we had, I had an interesting thing there. We had one of the parents there had been working at Apple Computer on the original Macintosh. Wow. His name was John Couch. He's on Wikipedia and all this stuff. And so he, because of that, we had a few Macintoshes at the school. Yeah. So in high school, I was kind of the Mac geek actually. And I would help lay out the newspaper and stuff. And then, my friend had a Mac at home, and when I was over there, I would disappear and I would play on his, I would write stuff in HyperCard. And HyperCard's this weird kind of card-based thing where it was almost like a early World Wide Web sort of feel. You would have each card had buttons and code, and you could then hook the cards together and stuff. So do all kinds of silly stuff with that.
Almost like, you know, a forms back on, and this was on the Mac, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And the code you'd write in it, what was it?
It was a weird sort of like scripting kind of language. It was their own kind of. So HyperTalk, I believe, was the language. Huh. And it was, yeah, kind of one of these things that was trying to be like a more conversational kind of language. Almost, I forget what their current script is. There's like Apple Script or something, but it's almost, you would say like, put the first word of the third line into field this, you know, and so you would write little like sentences.
Wow. So, that's crazy.
Yeah, that was interesting.
So, being the, you know, computer nerd in high school, did you know that you were going to go to college for this, or?
You know, it's so funny. Like looking back, I'm kind of like, this is one of those things where I look at myself and I go like, what was I thinking? Because I loved playing with computers all the time. Totally natural for me. And I just didn't see it as a job or a field of study in college at all. I just didn't even consider it. So I studied physics in college, and I went to the Naval Academy in Annapolis, and they had it. Yeah. And they had required 1 year of computers there. And I actually, it was in Pascal, and I actually just had my dad buy me a book on Pascal, and I read it. I actually just skimmed parts of it and then tested out of the class. So I've actually never taken a computer class, you know?
Wow.
And so, I was kind of like then, but then I was jealous. My friends were like taking computer class, and I was like, oh, that looks like fun. And I'd probably ace these classes, you know? So, I didn't actually take any computer classes there. I ended up, you know, I kept bumping into stuff like, my physics senior project, the professor, it was doing something with low, like very low temperature, you know, like just a few degrees Kelvin. And the teacher had all this data, and he'd run it on his Mac, but uploaded it to a Unix share, and he couldn't get to it. So basically my entire A on this project was getting my professor's data back and massaging the data and like just figuring my way around the Unix system on the network and stuff.
Wow.
Go ahead.
Did you go into the Navy then?
So I had like a, I actually did a brief internship, like my senior year. I went to Los Alamos Labs and I got to goof around on the they had a Cray computer, and I actually got kicked off and my rights to it revoked because I tried to write a nuclear simulator to like do fission, and I created basically a chain reaction, right? And so they're like, yeah, your computer time is used up for your time here. So then I was in the Navy, and I was just, you know, a junior officer. So I was supervising in the nuclear plant and sleeping almost none. And, you know, it was a good time to be in the Navy. It was after, or the Cold War was basically over, and the, you know, Middle East conflict stuff had not started. And so I got to travel around some. And then my last year on the submarine, as my commitment was up, I was, reading books about Java and C++ and just trying to, I was like, yeah, I think I'd like to get a computer job. And, you know, I guess I need to study up on this stuff.
That's funny. And so, the work you did on the submarine, was there much actual like programming in that, or was that really?
No, basically none. I mean, there was one part towards my last year on board. I was the communications officer, and they had these computers they were bringing in, and a good amount of them were Unix. And it was the same sort of thing where it was like, radio men couldn't figure out, or the sonar men, I forget. They couldn't figure out how to get data off of the system. And so I'm like, you know, dorking around on the Unix, you know, bash and trying to figure out like how to get, you know, how to get data in or out.
That's interesting.
So, yeah.
And so you left the Navy and became a Java or C++ developer?
You know, I saved up some money and I got out and I read more books and I just played around on the computer for the summer. And then I got the local, it was a free magazine, you know, of the local computer. It was called Computer Edge or something. Mm-hmm. And so I looked in the classifieds and just started calling some people. And, my brother had a friend that was like, oh, you should check out this Visual Basic thing. Like, I'm doing that. I'm, you know, it's super fun. I'm making money. This is cool. So I played around a little bit with Visual Basic too, just enough to kind of know what it was. And I went in and talked to, I got an interview with this guy, and it was a VB shop. And so I was answering all these questions, and basically I was answering them like it would have been C++.
Sure.
He's like, that's fine. We'll figure this out. He's like, okay, tell you what, I don't really have money to hire somebody now. It wasn't a job posting. He was actually posting for like, you know, custom work, you know, but so then I managed to talk to him, and he's like, let me bring you in at minimum wage, like an internship, and we'll just take it from there. So, and then, you know, pretty soon he hired me on, and I worked there for a few years, and that was great. I mean, we were doing mostly desktop apps, VB3 through 6.
Nice.
And he had tons of books. You know, back then there wasn't this whole internet kind of availability of everything you want to look up and Stack Overflow. So I remember there's Deborah Carrata had a book, Doing Objects in VB6, was really good. And then Dan Appleman's, it was some kind of Visual Basic guide to Windows. It was like the Win32 API and the registry and all this. And I read a book on SQL too. And so pretty soon it was just fun. Like all of a sudden it's like, whoa, now I can do this. And pretty soon I'm calling into Win32 and I'm optimizing SQL queries. And, you know, just like the amount of stuff I was able to do was just, you know what I mean? It was blowing my mind. I was having so much fun.
It's crazy because you can get neck deep really quickly.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it was easier to get that deep then than now, just because the number of layers is
smaller.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is kind of a thing when you're a beginner, everything's new. and everything's fun. And like now I'm like second guessing myself about everything. And I'm like, oh, maybe I should probably test this, or oh, what's the perf? Back then I was like, oh, cool, I'll just do this. Now I'll do that. You know what I mean? It's like, it's all just
it
new
works,
stuff to
so
try.
We'll chip it. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, I do remember one crazy thing though. We had one project come in, and it was in C++, and it was porting from Borland C++ to whatever, Microsoft C++. And the boss was like, yeah, we can't really take this job because I'm the only one here that does C++. And I was like, well, I've read some books. Let me try it, you know? And so he basically just like was like, okay, we'll do it. If it does, you know, I forget how he worked it out with the client, but anyhow, so I did it, you know? And so, going through and like, and that was all just like directly calling Win32 API to like show all the UI elements and everything. But the interesting part of this story is that it was 1999, and I'm going through this and I'm looking at stuff and I'm like, it's generating like basically everything it was doing. It was creating temp files and it was moving things around based on database strings. And I'm like, these are all two digit date based. Like, is this Y2K thing I've been hearing about? And so it totally was. And I went through it. I made this little report up and I'm like, hey boss, this is a problem. Like, this program is totally going to break. And so he was able to kind of bid it back to the client, be like, look, your program is like, you got to ramp this up to ship it before the end of the year, you know?
Yeah. So. Or it's about to break. Yeah.
Yeah. And another fun thing I did at that one was there's this thing for like, it was environmental impact studies. So the idea is like, you've got a gas station, somebody buys a lot where a gas station was and they want to put in a restaurant. Well, you got to do all these studies to make sure that there hasn't been leaching into the ground, if you know, that the tanks aren't leaking or whatever. And so the idea is like, there were tabs upon tabs upon tabs, you know, that was how all these, they were all battleship gray and just tons and tons of tabs. So you'd fill in all this data and then it would use the Windows like automation stuff to like generate these 60 page Word docs, you know, and it would like fill in all the stuff. And so then the idea is you could submit this to whoever it was, the government agencies, and you'd have this official report. So I remember going through and I'm like, because of the way all this stuff was, it was this hierarchical tree of all this data, and I had to create this report. So I ended up, I'm like scribbling stuff up on paper, and finally I'm like, oh, I'll do this, and I'll kind of, and so I like wrote this thing up and I take it into my boss. I'm like, I think I figured this thing out. And he's like, nice use of recursion. And I was like, what's recursion? So yeah.
Oh, it works.
Yeah, exactly.
So did you work in teams at all at that job, or was that something that you came into later?
It was very small at that job. It was me, the boss, and one other programmer. And you know, we were both learning from each other, and you know, the boss would review our work over time, and you know, it was a really cool, like, over time be more and more confident, and you know, keep picking up books and going to the local user group and writing more code on my own. And yeah, so it was not really it was a small team. It was a very small team.
And do you find that things were easier to learn then because you weren't afraid of looking dumb?
Yes. Or at least I knew, like, the people I had looked dumb in front of was my boss, right? You know, maybe the one other coworker. And I knew how to manage that. Like, I was okay with that, you know, and my code was never going. No one was ever going to see my code except my boss.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, I mean, it really was kind of more this thing of like, hey, if the program runs and, you know, the badge scanner works, or it communicates with this, you know, IoT, it was, you know, like working with devices or, you know, whatever. It was like, my code works. The boss thinks it's cool. He would test stuff out pretty thoroughly. And so, yeah, you know, it was kind of this like no fear sort of thing. So great, great environment to learn. And then I went from there to much bigger shop. Well, it was like 15, it was like a 50-ish person company, 15, 20 devs. and you know, QA design, all that kind of stuff. And so I definitely was a much bigger pond at that point, you know.
And what spurred that decision to switch jobs?
A few things. One was the job I was at was all desktop app, and this new job was it was a company that was all internet apps. So that was one thing. And then a good friend of mine from high school, actually the friend that had the Macintosh that I would do the HyperCard hacking on, he was a PM there, and he's like, hey, this is a good job, they pay well, you know, there's a lot of opportunities, I think you'd really like it, you know. So yeah, so, and you know, I see that over and over again, I'm sure you do too. It's who you know, it's the connections you make over time, you know,
always.
Yeah, so I ended up going over there, and over a period of, you know, 3 years or something, moved out from junior dev to director of engineering, and I was the engineering director right around the time that they shut everything down and laid everyone off because of the .com. But that was a huge time to move from, like you're talking about, that's the next step, right? Is learning how to work in a team and how to manage a team and how to, you know, and that's actually a place where my junior officer stuff from the Navy came in handy, because back then I was managing nuclear technicians who knew more about what they were doing than I did. But but then over time I learned about, okay, they know the technical implementation details. I know where we need to get to, and I'm going to work to make them, a lot of the time it was like coming up with a decision and making them comfortable to the point where they felt like it was their idea, you know, yeah. And they had bought into it, and then they owned it and went forward. So the same kind of thing, working on a small team. And I it was, a lot of it was like giving people enough ownership, you know, to really just make sure we hit our targets, and they owned what they were doing. So,
and so the sort of managing or leading was pretty natural because of your experience there.
Yeah, although, so it was, of course, I had a ton to learn. The hardest thing really for me was to stop writing code, you know, and or to find out what I could code on, because over the course of time, you know, I was managing, hiring, pitching jobs, I was writing up proposals, budgets, all that kind of stuff. And it's really hard to, you know, and so I would have to try and find stuff where I could, you know, add some value, as like writing libraries the whole team would use, or writing that kind of stuff.
So. And was the passion to try to stay into the code, did you reluctantly take the leadership positions, or were you excited to?
I think I was excited to. I mean, some of it honestly was, over time, working there long enough, I was like, man, we should be doing this differently, or the way we're doing things here is way too complicated, you know? And so over time, it was kind of like a desire to make things better at the level of like, hey, let's the places where things don't need to be complicated, let's not let that, you know, get in the way.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of stuff. Like, so see, I did enjoy it. It's just the balance.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think most developers at some point in their career have to decide, you know, there's sort of a couple of paths. They either become sort of the ancient coder that knows what he knows, and he's going to be in the corner and part of a team and all of that, and that's what he wants to do because he's afraid to get away from the code, or taking the leadership position, knowing you're going to be having to pull back from the technical details a little, but not necessarily, you know, long-term. Was that sort of what went into your decision?
It was. And then, you know, part of it was that was my day job. And then I started doing more like coding at home on different, like more involved things. Like I writing music programming. I learned stuff about direct sound, direct X. And I wrote like a little theremin step synthesizer kind of, you know, like little program, and so I got into that, and then I started messing around with like some open source stuff, RSS Bandit, and writing my own RSS aggregator, and then, you know, around that time blogging was really taking off, and so getting more involved in community stuff as far as, you know, oh, if I want to, like, discovering, oh, here's N-Hibernate, oh, here's Ornini, here's all, you know, and all of a sudden, boom, yeah, there's all the, whoa, there's a ton of stuff going on in .NET open source. And, you know, so that, for the next few jobs, just getting deeper into that. I worked at that job for a few years, and then I worked a couple other jobs, like financials. And then I actually ended up getting hired as the first employee at Phil Hack and his friend's consulting company. This was nice. Before either of us was at Microsoft. And so that was just a ton more like open source stuff, you know, and we were doing .NET Nuke integration and all this kind of stuff. And so, yeah.
I just did a .NET Nuke conference.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was very interesting. You know, cause you know, I had built some systems on iBuySpy back in the days, and I don't know how, you know, it's certainly better than iBuySpy was. I'm not denigrating it, but it was weird to see that whole ecosystem still just sitting there and with lots and lots of developers developing for it. And, you know, I've kind of forgotten about it.
You know, I was just thinking back on this, and I don't think those guys get enough respect kind of for the whole kind of trailblazing thing of making a business with open source .NET.
Like, yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And, like, and that was like the .NET world was kind of like, what's open source? And the open source world's like, what's .NET? And
absolutely. And now when you were making these moves, like joining Phil's company and such, were you married or had a family at that point?
Yeah, I actually got married the year I got out of the Navy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and, you know, over time having kids, I got three kids now. And so, you know, having kids and, you know, juggling all that stuff, you know.
So how did this, you know, you were going home and coding as well as working all day. How does that affect sort of family life, especially when it, you know, what we do for work looks a lot like what we do for fun?
Yeah. You know, it's a balance. Over time, like I did find it was important to at least like don't hide in my office, like bring my laptop out, hang out with the family. Someone's reading a book. I'm sitting on the couch with my laptop. Like, you know, there's that. There's the, you know, after the kids go to bed was a magic time for a while until they stay up later than me now sometimes, but, you know, but I mean, that was always a thing. And then, you know, a really nice thing was when I started working with Phil, that was my first work from home job.
Oh, nice.
And so that, and then I've been working from home since then. So throughout my time at Microsoft, and then, between working with Phil, I also worked for Vertigo Software and I worked from home from them too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so that has given, you know, there's so much more flexibility to that. So the kids are kind of used to, okay, you know, dad's maybe off, or, you know, like I'm on my computer in the evening or whatever, but also like I can say like, hey, I'll drive you to school, you know, this, or, you know, I'll take a day off and do something, you know what I mean? There's the flexibility of I'm around.
That does
as well.
Help.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And have you gotten your kids into computers at all?
So that's funny. I've all three kids, I've done some, the two older kids, oldest kid, I gave her a basic JavaScript HTML kind of class, and she's like, yeah, that's cool. And then she was done with it, you know. And then my middle daughter, she took a Python class, and so I helped her with that. And I did see that she kind of like she liked it. She did Python and she did built a basic WordPress site, and I helped her with that. And I feel like she got it and she kind of had fun with it. But then again, too, she's busy with stuff. But it's funny, my youngest daughter is totally into the whole like tinkering stuff, and it's her thing. And I'm not like trying to get her to do it anymore. And maybe that's the thing. It's like,
yeah,
maybe I pushed it with the older ones, and the youngest is like, hey, come show me this, you know? So it's, I've been, let me see, some things with that. She got one of these, those Jewel bots, you know, where it's it's Arduino and it's a little watch with flashing lights and a buzzer and Bluetooth. So I've helped her some with that. And then she did there's this Lego robotics thing. It's called First Robotics or First Inspire or something. So I helped coach her class with that. So it was fourth and fifth graders, and it was programming a Lego Mindstorm robot to go and do some stuff.
Oh,
and
cool.
Then there's some 3D printing stuff that they did, and she's way into 3D printing now and 3D design and stuff. So, but the interesting thing, over the holidays, I had a quiet day, you know, nothing going on at work. It might have even been a Saturday or something. And I was like, you know, I've always meant to learn Unity, and I'd been talking to Steve Sanderson. He just built something in Unity, and I was like, wow, I should. Today's the day, you know. So uh-huh. I started doing a little tutorial on Unity, and my youngest daughter came in. She's like, oh, can I watch? Like, yeah, sure, you know. And then I remember like all three of my daughters have said like, hey, teach me how to make a game. You're a programmer. Teach me how to make a game. So then she's watching and she's like, why are you making all the, like, it's a simple Unity 101 thing where you roll a ball around and you hit these squares, and each square you get a point. When you get all the points, you're done, you know?
Right.
And she's like, why'd you make all the squares the same color? And I'm like, well, that's what the tutorial said. I'm just following. She's like, no, we need to make it a rainbow. Make all the squares a different color. So then I'm kind of like clicking around. She's like, hey, can we switch seats? I'm like, oh, I've done this to enough people. Like, I recognize when this is. So she pushes me out of the seat. She's clicking around, and she's totally fearless, you know. And so she's making mistakes, and I'd help her fix them, you know. But she's like, makes everything rainbow. And she's like, why is it a ball? It should be a shark. Shark eating fish. I'm like, I don't even know how to do that in Unity. Like, and I'm having to go in and create 3D models and import them. And so we had a ton of fun with it. And the funniest thing with it was we create this thing and it's a shark, you know, eating fish, but we left the physics as if it was a ball. We didn't think of that. So then we start playing the game and you're, you know, rolling it around WASD keys, and it's the shark rolling around on the floor. You know, it's like flopping around, you know? And we're like, this is the best game ever.
That's a magical moment.
Yeah. And so then all of a sudden, like, light bulbs go off in my head. And I'm like, this is how I learned to program, you know, like Apple II, making little Tron games and typing tutors and stuff. And then like the same sort of thing. It's like most people don't get into programming because they want to learn program, like they want to do something, you know, like, or a lot of people, you know, they want to make something, they want to do something. And so she wanted to make this game. And then as in the course of it, we're writing functions and, you know, fixing bugs and stuff. And I'm like, that's what it is, you know, at least in my case and in her case, it's like, that's what made it fun, you know?
Absolutely. And yeah. Not a lot of us, you know, as kids were like, I really want to build a forms over data and write reports and do some analytics, you know?
Exactly.
Though I did, one of my first programs as a kid was a forms over data to store my D&D characters.
Ah, yeah. See, that
one. Yeah, you know, I was a troubled kid, evidently. Well, this has just been absolutely great. I really appreciate you doing the show.
Well, thank you. I mean, this is a ton of fun. And like, you know, it's when you invited me, and then I'm starting to think back. I'm like, oh, yeah, that was super fun. Yeah, that was fun. And, you know, just reminding me how much, like, that's kind of the whole point for me, is that it's fun first, you know, and then the everything else kind of falls out of that. But yeah, so
yeah, thank you so much. As developers, we all have those, you know, tough days of can't figure something out. But when you get some perspective, you realize how much joy and how lucky we are to do what we do.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you have a great day there, and we'll see you next time on your podcast.
Sounds great. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks for listening to the Hello World Podcast. Remember, you can subscribe to the Hello World Podcast at hwpod.com.